Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
I was sitting there in the room when the ping pong balls, and you got to about that last ping pong ball, and you could see Ethan Purser, who was there, and for representing the Guardians, like, I think he's figuring out that this could happen here.
Number one overall pick, number one overall prospect in the Cleveland Guardians organization. Let's talk about Travis Bezzana. It's a Baseball America prospect profile. Scott Braun, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce. Jeff, number one overall pick by Cleveland. And they were pumped to have the first pick because it's a pretty good team that ended up making it to the ALCS. So will we see Travis Bezzana contributing to this team in 2025? You know, I like to hit you with the hard hitters right off the jump.
I'd say if there's one spot in that infield that seems to have a hole at this point, at least long term, it's probably second base. And I wouldn't be shocked that, you know, if Bezzana hits the way he did for 3 years at Oregon State early on in the minor league season this year, that, you know, maybe by August, certainly by September, he'll probably see some time with the Guardians. I think when you look at the player overall, just an absolute master of his craft when it comes to hitting. And I think the work and just the work ethic, sort of the stuff behind it, his understanding of who he is as a hitter. I've written about this before. He's really into the numbers. He really knows, you know, what he wants to do and the type of hitter that he wants to become. What he is he's somebody that pairs and sort of blends really excellent bats of ball skills with really good approach and the ability to hit for some power, despite being sort of a hit tool first player, you know, is looking to pull the ball in the air consistently, you know, get his swing at a point that he can consistently backspin the ball and get the most out of his power. He knows he's not the biggest guy on the planet, and that, you know, getting into his pull side power consistently, particularly on certain types of pitches and certain pitch locations, is going to allow him to put up the most production, you know, over the course of his career. I think just a really good all-around player. You know, he's not going to play shortstop. He's going to play second base. He's really solid there defensively, a really good base stealer as well. I wouldn't say quite five tools because it's not a great arm, but, you know, when we look at this player, particularly from the offensive standpoint, I think has a chance to be, you know, a multi-time all-star and a big star in the middle of that order for the Guardians for years to come.
The thing that I just really – it just jumps out to me about Travis Bezzana is I feel very comfortable, very confident that he's going to be that kind of player who just keeps getting better, who keeps refining, who keeps improving, because he is kind of a cage rat. He is one of those guys who likes to find a challenge, attack it, and get better at it. We saw this in his last year going in his draft year, where it's like, okay, he had some things to work on. He wanted, and Jeff just mentioned a couple of them, where it's like, he just gets better. He's a guy who's going to spend his offseason. I'm kind of excited to see, okay, what has he improved at this year in the offseason? Because he looks at the offseason as an opportunity to fix, improve, get better at something for the next year. And those are the kind of guys a lot of times, I mean, it can be a balance, right? You don't want to overdo it, but those kind of guys are the ones who often can make that fourth, fifth, sixth adjustment, because nowadays in baseball, it is point, counterpoint. You do something, then the pitchers do something else, then you do something else, then they do something else. And he has a lot of adaptability. He has a lot of baseball aptitude. And Jeff, again, like, you've seen him for years now. He just keeps getting better every time you see him, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think that's the big thing is, you know, he wanted to add impact. You know, he went to Driveline. He spent time doing that. He showed improved impact. That continued to creep up the next year. You know, speed, all those sort of things. If there's an element of his game, I mean, that, you know, is potentially a weak point, he's somebody that's probably as well versed in that, if not more well versed than those that might be actually scouting him. You know, he knows the areas that he needs to improve in. And I think just consistently has shown, you know, aptitude and focus to do that. And I think a lot of that just comes down, you know, to the makeup, the type of individual he is, just, you know, a guy that wants to win, you know, sort of challenges those around him to compete for excellence every single day. And I think in that sense, you know, a lot of like the off the field sort of makeup comps that we got were guys like Derek Jeter, you know, Brady, et cetera, those sort of upper echelon mentality type of guys. And I think that's what sets him apart and what allows him to sort of get the most out of his skills and continue to improve every offseason.
The point I wanted to make on that that really kind of stands out to me is he also has the chance to be really important for baseball, because it has been quite a while since we've had a great Aussie baseball player in the majors, especially a hitter. You know, Dave Nielsen is probably the best Aussie hitter that we've ever seen in the major leagues. Travis Bezzana has a chance to kind of potentially exceed that. And if he does, you talk about the globalization of the game. And a lot of when we talk about the globalization of the game in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, it's been how Japanese players who are stars both in the US and in basically Japan, but also Asia. We've seen Korean players who are stars coming over. Obviously, there's the Dominican, there's Mexico, there's even now we're seeing some players from Colombia in addition to Venezuela and Panama and all that. But Australia, New Zealand, especially Australia, are a big part of that as well. And Travis Bezzana could kind of be the first star, truly star player that we have coming out of Australia in a while, especially as a position player, which is a little different than if you're hoping to see a pitcher pitch, especially if you're hoping to see a reliever. You hope to see Graham Lloyd come into the game, or some of Travis Blackley, some of the pitchers that we've seen over the years coming out of Australia. So I'm really excited also to see from that standpoint what it's going to mean for baseball if Travis Bezzana gives us an Australian position player star.
Yeah, that would be very cool. You know, the other thing that makes him special is he's part of a system that produced a lottery number one overall pick, which I think is special too, JJ. I know you've written about the draft lottery quite a bit, and you know, the White Sox are a perfect example right now of a team that set the loss record, and they're going to pick 10th because they're being punished on the opposite end of this. So this is a cool component, and it's not just saying, hey, if you're as bad as possible, you get to take the top player according to your organization.
The Guardians were not expected to get the number one pick. I was sitting there in the room when the ping pong balls, and you got to about that last ping pong ball, and you could see Ethan Purser, who was there, and for representing the Guardians, like, I think he's figuring out that this could happen here. And it is. It's one of those things that for them and the Reds, because the Reds also picked second that year, these can be organizational changing moments when that ping pong ball just bounces the right way and you beat the odds to get a number one pick. The other thing about this is we've talked about, this is a really good Guardian system. And Jeff, you mentioned like second base is kind of the one opening. The one thing I'll say about that though is whoever you are, including if you're the number one pick in the draft of Travis Bezzana, you better grab your opportunity and take it, because there's probably someone else coming trying to snatch that opportunity away from you. Because this is a team that's going to have multiple options at almost every infield and outfield position, I would say, over the next couple of years, especially in the infield.
When you look at organizational depth, that's something that the Guardians have done a great job here, you know, over the last couple of years. And it's allowed them, you know, despite some limitations on spending, to consistently be competitive. And, you know, they've had to get creative with some of that, but a lot of it comes down to their ability to sort of nail picks in the domestic market in the actual draft, as well as how well they've done internationally, where it seems like every year they got two or three guys coming out of a crop that are, you know, switch hitting middle infielders with a slick glove or something like that. So they do have a lot of, you know, organizational infield depth. So, you know, for them to be able to add a number one overall pick and, you know, a star college hitter on top of it, I think, you know, just further adds to the riches that they have.
All right. If you like what we're talking about here, with the top prospect in the Cleveland organization. We have this for every single team. If you're missing one that you're looking back for, it's coming. They get released on a day-to-day, weekday basis during spring training. Let's say you're a Guardians fan, you want to know about the rest of your division and what those top prospects look like. Go for it. We'll have videos for you available on the Baseball America YouTube channel, and we'll see you on the next prospect profile. We're not going to beat around the bush. The White Sox were the worst team basically in baseball history, so they better have some gems on the way coming to the major league organization. Let's talk about their top prospect, Noah Schultz. It's a BA prospect profile. Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce, along with me, Scott Braun. JJ, is Noah Schultz the next big thing for the White Sox in their rotation?
He better be, because obviously, like you said, they need a lot of help, but they do have a very nice 1-2 pairing here with Schultz and Hagen Smith, their number one pick last year. And Schultz really does have a chance to be special. It's you don't want to go overboard here because he's a young pitcher. We want to see if he can be durable. We want to see if he can hold up. But then when you watch him pitch, you just over and over, it's like, this is a guy who's as good, as promising as any pitching prospect in baseball right now. You know, he's not our number one pitching prospect, but he's right in that group. And if you said, well, if you think he's so great, why is he not number one? We just want to see him throw five innings. The White Sox have been very conservative. He's very young, so they've been conservative on his workload. But because of that, he's never faced 20 batters in a pro game. He's never thrown five innings in a pro game. But when you watch him pitch, you can't help but think about Randy Johnson. And that's because you have this 6'9" lefty. The ball comes out of a little bit of a weird slot, makes it hard for hitters to pick it up. And you hesitate to throw that on a guy, because I'm not saying that Noah Schultz is going to be a Hall of Famer. But when you talk to evaluators, when you talk to scouts who watch him, that's the guy who keeps being brought up, because there just aren't a lot of pitchers on the planet who have ever kind of looked like this. And the one who looks like this, who's a little taller, Noah Schultz is 6'9", not 6'11". But that fastball, that breaking ball, you just can't help but think of the big unit when you watch him pitch. Jeff, like, am I going overboard there? Or, again, not saying he's going to be that, but that's the kind of the memories that he evokes.
Yeah, I think when you just look at the player and just sort of what the archetype is, like what this low slot left-hander with a humongous body, you know, and humongous stuff and a big slider can potentially become, kind of naturally you just go to somebody like Randy Johnson. But I think when you dig in, you know, under the hood, you look at the numbers, you know, it's a sinker that sits 95, 96, 97 miles an hour, will touch 99 to 100 with true sink and heavy arm side run, kind of just see how, you know, the ball comes out of the hand, it explodes. He's really deceptive. He hides the ball really well. And as you mentioned, it's a funky arm slot that kind of plays up the horizontal movement on both the sinker and on that slider, which is really like his go-to pitch. I think, you know, the pitch that when you talk about Noah Schultz, the conversation, yeah, he throws really hard, he's big, but the conversation starts with that plus-plus slider. It's a huge sweeper, plays really well off of the arm side movement on that two-seam fastball. It's a drop down of like 12 to 13, 14 miles per hour in terms of velocity, but still gets a good amount of movement for the amount of velocity it does generate on that pitch. And then he's got a changeup as well, which is less ballyhooed than the fastball and the slider, but it's still a really good pitch. Has good vertical and good velocity separation off of the fastball. Also runs a ton, like 16 to 17 inches on average, which once again, when you're playing that off of that, you know, two seamer at 95, 96, 97, sometimes 99 miles an hour with all that arm side run, and you're looking at a pitch in the mid 80s to high 80s with that sort of arm side movement, and then a slider that moves the opposite direction. He works in a cutter as well. It's a really interesting pitch mix and a big body and very projectable. Once he adds innings and sort of figures out how to get deep into starts and be more efficient with his pitches, I think the sky's the limit with Schultz, and probably has as much upside as any arm that's on the top 100 right now.
I'm now going to just point out something where he actually is better than Randy Johnson. At this point in Randy Johnson's career coming out of Southern Cal, Randy Johnson was as wild as anyone you were ever going to see. This was a guy who was walking 7/9. This was a guy who really did. You just didn't know where the ball was going to go. Noah Schultz already throws strikes. He's basically got a above average walk rate, above average control at a very young age. Now, again, we'll put that caveat in. He hasn't shown that he can do that for five, six innings because he hasn't really got that opportunity. but he throws strikes already, which often is kind of that last to-do list item for these really long limb, these really tall pitchers. Understandably, it's like it just takes longer to get everything under control. Noah Schultz has everything under control at a very young age. You kind of put that all together. It's really hard not to get excited about him. Again, just hoping that he can just keep it going, keep it healthy. He doesn't really have a whole lot of like, oh, if he can do this a lot better other than stay healthy and work deeper into games, which we probably will get to see this year. This is the year that you really got to start getting him ready to be pitching the big leagues. And that means, okay, it's time to take a little bit of the training wheels off and say, here's five, here's six innings in the minor leagues so you can do five, six, seven innings in the major leagues.
Big picture, we need to do this for White Sox fans, okay? Obviously, I'm going to be hard on the organization right now, but at the same time, do we feel, Jeff, like this organization is in a good spot to start getting some talented big leaguers developed into the big leagues and become impact players? Just your overall look at where the White Sox are at, because unfortunately, this team can't just rack up, you know, three straight years of number one picks. That's not a thing anymore with the way the lottery works.
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly the trade with the Red Sox helped to do that a little bit. You know, adding a players like Kyle Teal to the top of that system. They already have some young catching depth with like Edgar Cuero, and then of course Corey Lee at the major league level. But I think adding Teal into that mix is a huge upgrade, especially from, you know, both sides of the ball, where like we don't have as much question with Cuero maybe offensively. But defensively, there are still some question marks there. And then you look at somebody like Brady Montgomery, who has huge upside, one of the better power bats out of a loaded college class last year. I think that helps. Chase Mydroth is sort of a sneaky player as well. All guys that I think, you know, fit and project as major league regulars, some sooner than others. I think both Mydroth and Teal could potentially contribute this year. You know, you look at the pitching, Schultz adding Hagen Smith in the draft this year. One of the two top arms, you know, outside of Chase Burns, probably, you know, one of the best college lefties we've seen in a few years, a really good pitcher, has shown a little bit already in spring training, you know, how lethal his stuff can be. And you have a guy like Colson Montgomery, who's looking to bounce back this year and, you know, potentially could see a lot of time in Chicago with the White Sox. So I think there's, you know, some good players here. I think the stars are probably more on the pitching side with Schultz and Smith. But a few big league regulars and guys that should be up in 2025 and then others in 2026. But there is something coming. I just don't know if it's enough to potentially compete in the division. Certainly enough that they could win 75 games, which is a huge upgrade.
That's where I'm going to be like the cloud raining on everything here, which is just no. You look at this big league lineup and there's very few even potentially tradable pieces. You know, that you can look at and say, okay, these are guys who you hope have a bounce back year and then you get something significant for them in trades. They don't have a ton of those guys right now. There are prospects coming, but it's hard to say, like, if you compare the White Sox right now to the Guardians, who won the division last year, and you said, who has a better farm system? I could make a pretty strong argument for the Guardians. I think the Guardians have a deeper system. I think the Guardians have more position players, even though they don't have a Noah Schultz right now. This is an organization that it's going to be a long rebuild. You don't get back from one of the worst records of all time in a year or probably even 2 years. I would say that the good news for the White Sox is that rock bottom has been struck, but the climb from rock bottom is going to take quite a while.
The only bit of good news I'll finish with here is for White Sox to remember, you're in the AL Central. Generally, that does give you a chance to get back into the fold a little bit quicker. And JJ's going to tell me I'm wrong. But if you compare it to some of the other divisions, I understand. I understand that.
And not only that, three playoff teams, and it's not because they just kept playing each other, because now the schedules are such that there's much less of that. So, I mean, if you want to say, like, the Tigers are in a good position to be competitive for a while now. The Guardians are in a good position to be competitive for a while now. The Royals have the best player in the division, and he's locked up for basically longer than I'll be probably doing this at Baseball America. Maybe not. I hope not. But that's not like, I don't think this is the same as it is, you know, where maybe in 17, 18, 19, 20, even what we thought they were in 22, this is a division that the Twins have been consistently, and they didn't do it last year, but they've been pretty good, and they still have a core of young talent. I think that I don't think that this is necessarily as easy a path back as it was at other times.
Okay, I refuse to let JJ prevent at least a droplet of optimism, so I will give him some of that, and I'm going to give you this instead. This is how we'll finish this. Google the name, and I'll give you the spelling. I-S-H-B-I-A. Ishbia. Why? Because that could be the owner of your team, hopefully, in the next several years. And I don't know a ton about the two brothers that also own the Suns, but I can tell you this. They will probably up your payroll in a big market like Chicago and make the rebuild go quicker if you're able to buy some vets, some big-time vets, trade them off. And then, of course, once you're getting a little bit better, sign some players up long-term. So there you go. I'm going to give you some optimism on the way out. And thanks for checking out this prospect profile on Noah Schultz and the Chicago White Sox. We've got prospect profiles on the top prospect in each organization, according to Baseball America, if you check them out on the BA YouTube channel.
I almost feel like Tigers fans, you know, who have dealt with so much over the last decade plus, it's almost a breath of fresh air, but sort of shocking to them as well.
Let's hit the top prospect in the Tigers organization. You've seen him already in the bigs. The name is Jackson Jobe. It's a Baseball America prospect profile. Scott Braun here with JJ Cooper and Jeff Ponce. Jeff, Jackson Jobe, taking maybe even another step before we've seen much of him in the bigs yet and leading to a potential rookie of the year conversation coming up in 2025. Your thoughts?
It's going to be a matter of how many innings is he going to throw this year? How many innings is he going to throw in the big leagues? And how are the strikes? And they've been pretty good previously. I mean, he's had some walks, but I think that his level of stuff probably induces less swings, particularly at the minor league level, than it does at other levels, particularly the majors. When you dive into his arsenal, it is phenomenal. There are almost no pitchers on earth that can do the sort of stuff that Jobe can do. You know, just from a pitch movement perspective, where he gets a ton of ride on his fastball. I mean, during spring training, he's been sitting 97 and 98 on his four-seam fastball. He mixes in a two-seam fastball and does a great job of killing lift on that pitch. So it, you know, it more drops or sinks, of course, and has a lot of arm side run in comparison to the four-seam fastball. He added a power curveball as well that has a lot of two-plane movement and dynamic drop at an unusual high velocity. And then, of course, sort of his signature cutter as well and his changeup, which have been plus or better pitches for him really throughout his entire time as a professional. So it's just an outstanding pitch mix. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, how deep is he going to get in the starts? How efficient is he going to be? How many innings are they going to give him? Because from a matter of a stuff perspective, it's almost all world stuff that we're seeing this spring.
The thing that stands out to me, you mentioned about the control. I have zero worry about Jobe's ability to throw strikes. Even last year when we saw the walk rate go up, like you said, I think that there might be some sequencing issues. I think that sometimes he kind of mixes pitches enough, especially in the minors, where sometimes he would have counts go longer than they should. But pure strike throwing, he's never had a problem with it. Even last year when the walk rate went up, he had one of the best strike percentages in the minor leagues, sitting there 67, 68% strikes. You don't really almost see anyone going much beyond that. And really, you probably don't want to be too far beyond that. You're around the zone too much. So far in spring training this year, what have we seen? Really high strike percentages. This is a pitcher at a very young age who manages to combine exceptional stuff with really quality strike throwing as well. It's hard not to get overexcited about it because I think the way we wrote it up in our prospect handbook report on him is if you were designing a pitcher in the lab, they would kind of look a lot like Jackson Jobe. He has multiple plus pitches. He has pitches that really kind of feed in and work together well. Even if, you know, like you said, even if that fastball may not always play as a bat misser as much as maybe you would expect, you still put it all together. And especially when we talk about when this guy's 24, 25, 26 years old and has a little bit more experience under his belt, watch out, because this is a guy who just has the tools, who has the ingredients to be a front of the rotation ace.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's well put. You had brought up the strike percentage, you know, we were talking about this during handbook season and figuring out where he was going to rank inside of the top 100. And, you know, I think the big conversation was, is this the year of the pitcher? Because there's so many pitchers that are ranked inside the top 10 of the top 100 this year. But I think part of it is just the talent level. When you do have somebody like Roki Sasaki come over, but you also have a pitcher like Jackson Jobe, who I think had a legitimate conversation for the number one prospect over the last, you know, 6-7 months since we initially put Roman Anthony into that spot. And then, you know, of course, Sasaki took it. But I think you just look at the stuff, you know, you look at the strike throwing, you look at the athleticism. You know, he's an incredibly athletic pitcher as well. We usually don't see guys sort of check all those boxes. And I think it's one of the reasons that he is able to do things like add new pitches. And I wouldn't say on the fly because he had a full off season, but add new pitches that can become, you know, above average or better major league pitches within under a year, and just tinkering with things and being able to make adjustments and attack lineups in all different ways. And, you know, offhanded batters differently than he did the year before. It's that sort of interesting development. And we've seen guys like Yu Darvish just continually add pitches. We've seen guys like Bryce Miller do the same and have some success. So it'll be interesting to see how this all projects out over the next year, but could be a very exciting, you know, AL Rookie of the Year front runner sort of candidate.
I'm always looking for 80 grade media quotes too. And Jackson was able to accomplish that recently. He said, "I'm done with trying to dot a gnat's ass. Just here's my stuff. If you hit it, good. Odds are, probably not." Love that 80 grade quote. It was the best quote we've heard in spring training overall. So that's what you want to hear from your bulldog. That's a future ace quote right there. Anyway, let's go global here. The entire Tigers farm system right now, JJ, in your mind, how good is it?
We've been doing this at Baseball America since 1981. I can't say I have, but we have at Baseball America since 81. I think this is the best Tigers farm system we've had over that time. Now, the Tigers have really had a pretty thin farm system a lot of those years. Like, this has not been a team and organization that's really kind of built from within over the last 20, 30 years. Even when there was success, it was often by bringing in talent from outside. A lot of the case, I don't want to take away, you know, Justin Verlander is a feather in the cap. There are examples, but especially on the position player side, it's been a lot of years where it's been really thin. That's not the case now. I mean, we just talked about Joe, but you talk about Max Clark, you talk about Kevin McGonigal, you talk about Bryce Rainier, you talk about probably the best assemblage of catching prospects, or in some cases, hitters who play catcher that you can think out there. This is an organization that's got kind of a wide array of some close to the big leagues guys, some further away, high up, you know, high ceiling, high impact guys, that has pitchers. And I think that really you got to look and feel very confident about their ability to develop pitchers. We've seen that. They really have a good plan. Chris Fetter was their major league pitching coach, who really plays a role in this, was our major league coach of the year last year. But Jeff, kind of look at it all together, and I feel like that this is an organization, obviously had success, made it to the playoffs last year, but it does feel like they have Cy Young winner and Tarek Skubal also, but I feel like there's a chance that the best is still to come here.
You look over their drafts over the last couple of years, they've consistently found talent all over the draft board, which is a big part of it, a big part of why this system is ranked as highly as it is. You know, you have a combination like, you know, Max Clark and Kevin McGonigal that you can add to the top of this. They've gone out and they've acquired players that had big upside. You know, I think it's a pretty big win for them that they got, you know, Lorenzo and Trey Sweeney, and they were able to then add Jack Flaherty back in free agency the following offseason. So things have kind of gone really well in Tigers land over the last year or so. And I almost feel like Tigers fans, you know, who have dealt with so much over the last decade plus, it's almost a breath of fresh air, but sort of shocking to them as well. It's a shock to the system that the organization is just really functioning at a very high level right now. And I think, you know, they're sort of hitting their stride in a bunch of different areas. And that's one of the reasons that the major league roster looks pretty good. And they also have, you know, one of the best farm systems in baseball.
You have to feel good about watching this entire video here if you're a Tigers fan. So that's it on Detroit and their number one prospect, Jackson Jobe, who, of course, if all goes right, should be graduating from that status quite soon, early on this season. Thanks for checking this one out. If you want to learn more about top prospects per organization, we've got that for you on the BA YouTube channel, and you can check out podcast versions as we go division by division that way too. Just type Baseball America into wherever you get your podcast.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
I think he's going to be a consistent 25, 30-plus home run guy. I mean, if you see this guy take BP when he's healthy, there's a ton of bat speed.
Okay, Twins fans, Walker Jenkins is the top prospect in the organization, according to Baseball America. We have Ben Badler here. We have Carlos Collazo here. Let's talk it out. This is your prospect profile on Walker Jenkins. Feels like we were talking about his name in draft runnings not too long ago, Carlos, but where are we at with him as a prospect?
We're in a great spot with him. Not only is he the top prospect in the system, I think he's a favorite on the staff to maybe be the top prospect in baseball a year from now. We've got him 5 entering the year. He's exceptionally well-rounded. He's very young. He's extremely tooled up. I think the only question mark maybe that we've got with a guy like Walker Jenkins, and maybe this also is just a frequent question mark with Twins players and Twins prospects, is just the injury questions. He's a player who's dealt with injuries going back to his draft year. The summer before his senior spring, he had a hamate injury that limited him. This past season, he was limited by a hamstring injury. So if we can just get him healthy and keep him on the field, I think we're talking about a 5-tool player who's got above average or better tools across the board. He always stood out as one of the best pure hitters in his class at a really strong 2023 high school class, where he was kind of battling it out with Max Clark to be the top ranked high school player in that class. And then his power was a separator for him as well. We haven't seen the raw power for him or the in-game power for him so far in pro ball, but I'm extremely confident that he's going to be a guy who has a chance to hit for 30 or more home runs down the line as well. He hits the ball incredibly hard. He has minimized his strikeouts at a rate that I don't even think I was expecting him to do. I thought he was going to be a plus hitter with maybe a few more strikeouts than he's shown, but he makes a ton of contact against every pitch type. His swing from the left side is one of the more aesthetically pleasing swings that I've seen. He can run fairly well for his size. Most people seem to think he's going to be a long-term corner outfielder where he has a chance to be a plus defender. I actually think he runs well enough that I'd be curious to see him just continue playing center field. And I also am pretty high on his arm. I think he's shown a plus arm in the past, and I'd expect him to have an above average arm moving forward. So I guess, Ben, what's your question mark with Walker Jenkins outside of the injury issues? Because it's a pretty well-rounded player for me.
How fast can we get him up? I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I think he checks pretty much every box you're looking for in a young outfielder. He's 6'3". He's strong. He's athletic, powerful. And it's really a great blend of power, explosiveness. And at the same time, like you were saying, Carlos, he makes it look so free and easy in the batter's box, right? Like sometimes you see guys who are big and strong and physical, and they got kind of a stiffer swing, and it's power overhead, and you have some question marks about how it's going to work against more advanced pitching, but he has a ton of adjustability to his swing. He makes a lot of contact. He makes really good swing decisions because he recognizes spin. He controls his at-bats extremely well, and he does have huge power too. Now, maybe if you're just looking at the numbers on paper last year, you might not get a full sense of his power because he had a couple leg injuries, and I think that durability – I know Twins fans don't want to have another prospect who may have a history of injuries, but it's only 1 year with him. I wouldn't call him injury prone yet. But when he was, he missed time last year with the leg injuries, and when he was back on the field, it seemed like it still had an impact on him in terms of his ability to really get his whole body and really his lower half fully into his swing to drive the ball the way that he's fully capable of when he is 100% healthy. But I mean, if everything clicks, and I think it will with him, I mean, I agree. I mean, high OBPs, 30 plus home runs. And yeah, maybe it's more right field than center field, but I agree. I'd give him as much rope as possible to stay out there in center field. And if not, okay, fine. You have maybe an above average defender in right field who can also hit in the middle of your lineup one day.
Okay. And I know you keep mentioning, obviously, there's injury concerns, you know, just as much with many other players, but it's sounding to me, Carlos, like the floor is pretty high here too, right? Sometimes we're talking about a guy who, you know, might have one thing that's so off that it could prevent him from really being a solid big league regular. Aside from health, it's mm-hmm. Would you say it's hard to see him not being at least a regular contributor in the big leagues? It's hard to totally project a superstar.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, he still is very young. He still hasn't really been tested at the upper levels of the minors at an exceptional rate. So we'll see what happens there. But in terms of how we're thinking about him as a hitter, how me and Ben have described him as a hitter, we'd be very surprised if he struggled at those levels. I mean, it's a chance for a double plus hit tool. We're talking about how we're bullish on the power, despite not maybe seeing the home run totals in the minors so far, just knowing the exit velocities he's capable of, seeing the balls that he hit as a high schooler with wood bats. I think the power is going to come. I think we tend to maybe get overly critical of power output for young players, and especially for players who have the sort of physicality and bat speed and pure hitting chops that Walker Jenkins does. That power is just going to come naturally. And hopefully we can get that lower half figured out and healthy. But yeah, he's just going to impact the game in so many ways. He's not a true burner, so maybe he's not going to be a huge stolen base guy, but he's going to add value on the bases. He's going to be a good defender wherever he winds up in the outfield. So I do think that there is a solid floor here. That's why we have him so high. That's why he was so well regarded in his class. If he's not hitting for average, he's going to be taking his walks. He's going to have strength to miss hit balls. Like, they're just, it's hard for me to see Walker Jenkins not panning out in some capacity. I'm just super convicted in the hitting ability and the all around profile.
Yeah, I really have no questions about the power with him. I think he's going to be a consistent 25, 30 plus home run guy. I mean, if you see this guy take BP when he's healthy, there's a ton of bat speed. He gets the ball airborne naturally with the way his swing path works. He's consistently on the barrel, and he has huge raw power. So that's not really a question for me. And like you said, Scott, I mean, it's hard to talk about a floor necessarily with a player who's mostly been at the A ball level already. But at the same time, like, it's hard to see just from a hitting perspective what is going to go wrong with him, or like what wouldn't translate, what wouldn't work with him at higher levels, because he is such an advanced pure hitter with his feel for the barrel, with his ability to control his at-bats and manage the strike zone. So it's a really appealing combination of huge upside, but also, again, relative for a 19, soon to be, 20-year-old prospect who's only been the lower levels, a good balance too of floor as well. I mean, Carlos said earlier he could be the number one prospect in baseball next year. I mean, I think if he goes out and he's dominating this year, I think we might have him at some point the number one on one of our midseason lists this year.
Wow. All right, trivia question then on our way out, because this will make Twins fans appreciative for the moment. What happened in 2023 for the first time in our game's history? Do you guys know that kind of led to this happening? It's a rule change.
Oh, is this the lottery?
Oh, is this the first lottery? Yeah.
Do you know how many picks they jumped? So the Twins, yeah. If you just took their
almost
their record,
10, like 7?
8
almost
picks.
10, right? Yeah.
8 picks. So if you just took their record, they would have been 8 picks later. They would not have had Walker Jenkins. So thank you
and
to the collective bargaining agreement.
There was also a huge tier break in that class. We had 5 very clear top of the class players. So picking from 5 to 6 that year is much bigger difference than 4 or 5. So that's a huge one.
Exactly. I remember the big storyline was, wow, look who jumped in and look how much of a difference it is. And it could change the future of a franchise that way. So I'm a big fan of the draft lottery, of course. Hey, for more of these, you can check them out team by team, top prospect in the organization. Just hit up the Baseball America YouTube channel if you're listening, if you're watching right now. And you can also check them out wherever you get your podcasts.
the raw power is right up there with the best hitters in baseball. I mean, O'Neill Cruz, Yordan Alvarez, like, it's not, oh, this guy has a lot of power or this guy has 70 power on the 20-80 scale. It's true, top of the scale, 80.
Let's hit the top prospect in the Royals organization, Jack Caglione. You're up. It's Baseball America Prospect Profile. Let's get right into it. Ben Badler, your thoughts on how he looked in spring training? Pretty damn good.
Yeah, I mean, when he looks good, he looks phenomenal. I mean, he is one of the most fascinating prospects in baseball, right? Even aside just from the two-way ability that he had in college, I just mean what he does as a position prospect, because he is just so extreme in what he does, right? It's extreme size. He's 6'5", like 250 pounds. It's extreme bat speed. It's extreme power. I mean, we're talking about top of the scale bat speed, the same with the raw power. And especially for somebody who is as big as he is, he's not just an all or nothing type hitter either, where it's huge power that comes with a ton of strikeouts. He actually made a lot of contact last year at Florida, especially when he was swinging at pitches that are in the strike zone. But that last part really is the other end of the extreme with him too, because he chases a ton too, like a scary amount of chase. And that's where I think, you know, Nick Kurtz from the draft last year, you know, fourth overall pick with Oakland, is ahead of him as a prospect, because Kurtz has a really good understanding of the strike zone. He'll draw a lot of walks, especially as a first base prospect, to go with his power, which is important. Whereas Caglione, I'm worried about what will happen with him, especially against better pitchers, if he continues with this, you know, super aggressive swing at stuff outside the strike zone approach that he has. And I think he knows that and understands that. It's just, it's hard for a first baseman to deliver a ton of value if you're just relying on power and aren't drawing that many walks, even if he does have the ability to put the bat on the ball pretty well when it's swinging at stuff in the zone. But on the other hand, if everything clicks for him, I mean, we're talking about a player who has a chance to hit 40 plus home runs. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a season in him where he hit 50 plus home runs. He has that type of power, and also that type of feel for the barrel. But just the fact that he's a likely first baseman, although it sounds like maybe he'll get some exposure in a corner outfield spot, but a likely first baseman for me, who's ultra aggressive beyond the strike zone with his swing decision, that's what creates the very high layer of risk with him. But obviously the reward potential is sky high too.
Yeah, Jack is an outlier prospect, and I think a lot of times these outlier players can be really scary for a number of reasons, but I've been wondering, like, are his outlier contact skills and outlier power enough to make up for the fact that he is so aggressive in his swing decisions? Ben mentioned that he does make a lot of contact in the zone. He doesn't really strike out at a high clip. His in-zone miss rate was between 12 and 13% in a brief pro debut last year. And I also think he has the sort of levers and plate coverage that he's still going to be able to do damage on pitch locations that most hitters, they don't have the ability to get their hands or the barrel there. And then when you pair that with the exceptional strength that he does have, it's just a really dangerous game for pitchers. Like, how do you attack a guy who is going to be swinging at everything? Like, there's not a safe location for you to operate, really. Now, that maybe can cut both ways, because you maybe won't have to ever attack him in the middle of the zone if he's just going to swing at everything. That's going to be the big question when we have a full season of Jack against pro pitchers. Are they going to take advantage of that aggression? Is his ability to barrel up the ball just so freakish that him having a chase rate for other prospects would be almost like we're not considering them? The fact that he's got the power, he's got the contact skills, it makes it a really interesting, kind of scary offensive profile. I'm also intrigued too by the defensive, like if he's actually going to run around in a corner outfield, how does he look there? I don't think he's a great runner. He's not a base clogger by any means. At first base, I think he actually has really good tools because he's a big target there. He has moved around well at the first base bag at times. So that piece will be fascinating. And if he can move around in the outfield, the pressure is just taken off the offensive profile. But it was eye-opening what he did in the spring. I would expect him, if and when he does get to the major leagues, he will consistently be at the very top of the leaderboard in terms of max exit velocity. He's already had 114+. Last year in college baseball, he had the hardest hit balls we saw all year. So it truly is 80-grade power.
Okay, if everything works out, right, as you guys are both mentioning, there's definitely risk here, and this is an outlier. What kind of power are we looking at? You know, the top end here, the headliner. Give me a number, and also factor in, Carlos, the ballpark that he'll be playing in the future, which also affects his legs, by the way, if he's going to be an outfielder there consistently.
I think the comp that makes a lot of sense to me is actually Pete Alonso. They went to the same high school. They went to the same college. Pete Alonso has led the league in home runs. We think Jack has the sort of power to lead the league in home runs. Maybe he is that same sort of more limited profile. Like, he's not going to excel on the bases. He's not going to be an elite defender, but he's got a ton of power. And in his peak years, he's got a chance to have 40, 45, 50 home runs. Like, I think that's certainly possible. Like, in his peak years, Jack could lead the league. I'm not sure exactly what sort of specific home run total, Ben, maybe you think he has in him. I'm also curious if you guys can think of any recent free swinging hitters that just have the sort of skill set to make that work, because as people who are looking at a lot of prospects, we obviously want that really well-rounded profile. We want to feel safe that there's some walk rate floor there when the hits aren't falling for you. But if there's any real free swinger that comes to mind, I'd be curious to hear it, because you just don't see these profiles very often.
Yeah, you don't see hitters who swing as often as Caglione does typically have success in the major leagues. We also just don't see many players on the planet who have his kind of raw power. And again, ability to actually put the bat to the ball when he's swinging at stuff in the zone. So I imagine pitchers are this year, they're going to know exactly what the book is on him, is stay away, throw him a lot of stuff out of the zone, get him to chase. We'll see how that works this year, what his adjustments are in terms of being able to modify his approach and improve his swing decisions. But the raw power is right up there with the best hitters in baseball. I mean, O'Neill Cruz, Yordan Alvarez, like, it's not, oh, this guy has a lot of power or this guy has 70 power on the 2080 scale. It's true top of the scale, 80 raw power. I mean, maybe aside from Giancarlo Stanton, otherwise there's not really anybody else who I'd say clearly has more power than Jack Caglione, because his bat speed, his ability to impact a baseball is pretty jarring.
Yeah, that's what makes this combo intriguing, of course, is the home run potential if it all works out. We know prospects are prospects, but yeah, maybe the swing decisions improve, and there could be some much needed power in Kansas City coming their way over the next couple of years. It's been hard for them to find some consistent power bats. Obviously, Bobby Witt Jr. is a star. Salvi's been there for a minute, but it's not an offense that has intimidated people the last few years, even last year when they were a playoff team. So this could be a welcome addition at some point. If you want to learn more about top prospects per organization, Baseball America number one per team, we've got it up on the YouTube channel. So make sure you check that out.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.